Hare Krishna. 27th of September 1995 in Delhi and preparing to leave for the Himalayas. I've never been to the Himalayas before in this lifetime. I've been on to the Himalayas on the Nepal side, driving up through it, but I've never been in India side, where the famous holy places Badrinath, Kedarnath, etc. are situated. If I happen to tell this to any devotee, they were surprised after having spent 18 years in India and neighboring countries, because so many devotees who just came to visit India had visited these places, but I'd never been. I always thought that to spend so much time, it takes minimum 2 weeks to see all the important places. I thought to take too much time is just too much, because we're part of a preaching mission. But anyway, it would be nice to see such places. But then I thought, if I could go there and share this with devotees around the world for Bhakti Godhead, that would be very nice. I heard that the time just after the rainy season, namely this time of year, is very nice, because after the rains there's a lot of vegetation, so it's very nice for photography. So I thought to arrange a trip, and I got that organized with different devotees while I was in England, arranged for devotees to meet me in India, and we'd go together. Now, arriving in Delhi from London, London is noisy, dirty, very much predominated by the modes of passion and ignorance. Very stressful place. And arriving in Delhi is exactly the same, except it's more noisy, more dirty, maybe more stressful in some ways, and hot also. That whetted my appetite for going to the Himalayas, where the air is clean and the atmosphere is peaceful. And in Delhi I also met Radhanath Swami, and when I said I was going to the Himalayas, he spontaneously started talking. He was very fond of this area, it seems. He's been several times. He started telling me of the glories of the Himalayas. He told me one time he visited with some of the prominent acharyas of the Madhva Sampradaya, who were installing the deity. They brought the murti of Madhva from Udupi to Badrinath to install him there. I believe he said this was 1985. They wanted to install him there because this is the place where he met and took instruction from Srila Vyasadeva, and also because he is still there. The story is that once at Udupi in his old age, he told his followers that, "I'm going to leave here and you won't see me here anymore, and I'm going to stay at Badrika Ashram." So shortly after that, he was lecturing on the Taittiriya Upanishad and he just vanished. Only his cloth remained on his seat. So it was understood that he'd gone to Badrika Ashram. That was how he apparently left this world. So he said that, "I would remain here in Udupi. My soul will remain here and my body will remain there." So he met the Madhva Swamis, and he was planning on going to... they were there at Badrinath, and they were planning on going to Kedarnath, but the Madhva Sannyasis forbade, said no. Followers of Madhvacharya, especially Sannyasis, they should never go to Kedarnath, although he'd been there several times before. Because he said, "This is a place of offense. to Bhima. Of course, Bhima is Madhvacharya. The story is that, of course, we understand it that this was a leela between Lord Shiva and Bhima. But the Madhva followers take it very seriously, that Lord Shiva had actually offended Bhima. So because it was a place of Vaishnava Para, they said that no follower of Madhvacharya, especially sannyasi, should go there. So when they heard this, some of the Grihastha followers who were with the Madhva Swami said, well, your sannyasis, we're Grihasthas, we're going anyway. So without telling them anything more, Radhana Swami decided to go with them. So they were driving along the way, and although when they left, the gas tank showed that it was full. Somehow or other, when they're along the way, it all ran out. So, of course, everything's very remote, and they had to hitchhike here and there. But what they found is that even by hitchhiking, that means every so often there's a vehicle, and you have to go a long way to any gas station. And so all the gas stations around, and it's not like a big city where there are so many, there are only a few. And if one doesn't have any gas, then you have to go a long distance to the next one. So they found that. So they were all out. They couldn't get any. So eventually, after going a long distance, they got some, they came back, and then the day was coming to an end, so they decided to cancel their Kedarnath trip. When they met the Madhva Sannyasis again at the Rishikesh and told them what had happened, the Madhva Sannyasis were very happy. So in this way, Radhanath Swami told me some different things about the Himalayas. I was becoming more and more enthusiastic to go. Anyway, I was enthusiastic. Then I met Jai Vijay Prabhu, who had just been up in the Himalayas for 3 months with the Padyatra. They spent 3 months there. You'll find also in the Bhagavatam there is a description how there are many sadhus who are wandering around the Himalayas even now. So he told me about that. He told me so many things, showed me so many photos. And he was getting more. He has many, many slides that were being developed. And he compiled so much information. He's going to write about the Himalayas starting in April of 96, when he stops traveling with the Padyatra, at least for some time. So I would highly recommend that the BTG staff contact him. Maybe you have to wait for him to stop in April 96. It means after Gaur Purnima. And you can get so much information from him. Now, Jayadvaita Swami, so Jai Prabhu had told me, thinks that a lot of the information that Jayavijaya Prabhu gives is too esoteric, but anyway, it's a lot of information. He's got a lot of information about all kinds of different things up there, which I'm not going to be able to go to so many places. There's so many, apart from the famous holy places, there's so many holy places up in the Himalayas. And he's got information on so many little holy places that hardly people from the outside they know about. Only local people, they'll go there maybe once or twice a year for some special mela or festival on a holy day. One reason they spent so much time up there is that they were collecting water for the Sahasra Tirtha Jal Abhishek of Srila Prabhupada. And that's one reason why they went to so many remote holy places. Jai Vijay Prabhu told me that you could collect 1,000 waters from just the Himalayas alone. There's so many holy places up there. He said it's like Vrindavan or Puri or Rameshwaram, where practically every stone there's some leela connected with it. You could write a huge encyclopedia about all the legends and lore of the Himalayas. Another thing he said is that the Ganga is flowing everywhere there. That means the branches and sub-branches of the Ganga. All the water joins together there in the Ganga or the Jamuna. There's so many little streams. So wherever you go in the Himalayas, even away from the roads, you would expect the roads to follow more or less the rivers. But wherever you go, you can hear the Ganga gurgling. So that wherever you are, there's always Ganga. He also told me at Badrinath how the temple is closed for 6 months a year, but some sadhus, or 10 or 12 people, taking permission from the government, or they stay up there through the cold of the winter, and the government gives them kerosene and so many different things, and they just stay and do their meditation or bhajan, whatever they're doing. Well, the head priest, he's from Kerala, because the priests there were brought by Shankaracharya, who is from Kerala. So he goes to Kerala for 6 months a year. But anyway, according to the desire of the Lord, you can see the story of why the Lord came here. So he wants to be worshipped by the devas, headed by Narad also. So inside the temple, before they lock it up for 6 months, they leave a big supply of firewood for cooking and grains, and they light the ghee lamp. Well, the ghee lamp is lit anyway, that's kept lit, and then they just leave the place. And when they come back after 6 months, they find all the supplies of which are used for cooking, for offering bhog to the Lord, are gone, and the ghee lamp is still burning, which means, of course, it has to be replenished. So that means that the Lord is being worshipped by the demigods. That's what's understood. Several of these places, just like at Yamunotri and at Badrinath, if you're just in the area where the temple is, and all around the year it's quite warm, because the hot water springs coming out from the Himalayas, they're so hot they heat the whole area. So if you stay in the right area, you never get actually too much cold. Jai Vijay Prabhu also showed me a photo of one flower which comes from Brahma Loka. That story is there in the Mahabharata, how Bhima went through great endeavor to bring a flower for Draupadi that she wanted. Went through great endeavor and had to go through a lot of fights also to get that flower. So that flower blooms for 1 month a year, and the smell is, it's so fragrant, he said, that if you bring that flower in the room, it will perfume the room for days afterwards with a smell of nothing else in this world. It's unique. There's nothing like that. So that's, the season of that is already gone, unfortunately. He told me many things. Anyway, we met Ramanuja Prabhu that evening in Delhi. Our bus was ready to go. The others travel up in our bus, but there'll still be plenty of walking. But then we can sleep in the bus also. I thought we could at least get out of Delhi and stop on the way up to Haridwar. But I was surprised. I'd never driven this way before. That Delhi goes into Ghaziabad, and then you have gone a little further, there's Modi Naga, and the whole, it's like Delhi goes on and on and on, and the satellite towns just go on and on and on. So anyway, we stop at the side of the road. It's not exactly in a city, but it's one of those dirty villages which cater for the traffic. All night there's traffic here, and all night there's this silly, tinny Indian cinema music is playing. But I don't mind so much, because I know that this is probably last night of of this worst side of India, which we're leaving for some time to go to the real India, which lives on in places like the Himalayas and the holy places. Still India, despite our degradation, there are so many wonderful holy places, and we're looking forward to getting up there. You could probably hear in the background this that cinema music I'm talking about. Well, I hope in the background, for most of our tapes, we'll have the sound of the Ganga. That's better. 28th morning. We rise to the strains of this cinema music that I was talking about. And there's no place to bathe. Oh, actually, there is a tube well, but it's not very nice with all the noise of the traffic. So we decide to drive on, and either we'll find some nice place to bathe, but my idea is to get all the way up to Haridwar and to take our bath in the Ganga, although Ramanuja tells me it's going to be cold, but that's how I'd like to take my morning bath, even if it's a little late. So we decided to start our Himalayan tour with a bath in the Ganga. There are many nice places to take bath on the way up, but we drove all the way up to Haridwar, took bath in the Ganga here. We're looking forward to having the blessings of Ganga Mayi throughout this trip. In Haridwar we see the Ganga rushing down with the small hills behind her, just the beginning of the hills. Ganga comes so fast, right from the very beginning, from Ganga, from Gomukh, she's rushing down, just like that verse in Bhagavata. Twaime nanya vishaya matir madhupate sikrit ratimad vahata adata gange vaugamadhanvati kunti devi is praying. May my attraction be unto you, O Krishna, just as the Ganga forever rushes towards the sea without hindrance. As you'll see from the photos, Haridwar appears to be a very visually pleasing town with ashrams, very nice looking ashrams along the Ganga Ghats. Wearing saffron here is nothing unusual. There's plenty of sadhus here. Going towards Ariskan Ashram in Haridwar. Ariskan Ashram consists of a few devotees in some rented rooms in a Mayavadi ashram. It's off the main, one of the main roads in one of the bazaar areas, but quiet road. Nice houses. There are many Mayavadi ashrams here in Haridwar where the main activity seems to be the sadhus are very busy growing their beards. Ramanuja was telling me he was here in June and there's so much crowds because that's the holiday season where the school holidays are on and then everyone brings their kids and they go all over the place in India. Especially now so many people have got their cars. So he says it's very much more quiet, although many people say this is a very good season to visit also. Because it's not too hot. The day temperature goes up to about 35, 36, which is not so hot as in late May and early June where it goes above 40. Of course, at Kumbh Mela time, then the place is absolutely packed. I haven't been here, but I've seen photos, and sometimes people even die in the crush. There's so many people. It's like other holy places of India, it's a funny mix of piety, and then you've got your cinema music on one side of the road and your sadhus on the other. So here we are. All the year round, there are pilgrims from all over India here. We found that when we took bath in the Ganga this morning, a group of Tamil ladies came down to take bath in the Ganga just next to where we were. Tamil Nadu is about as far away from Haridwar as you can get within the borders of India.
coming back from the West, I was explaining you land in Delhi, and it's another big, noisy, dirty city. But coming out to these holy places like Haridwar, we remember that, after all, India is India. So many nice holy places throughout the country. And of course, the spirit of the people is there also, even in the big cities. Haridwar means the gate to Lord Hari. That means the gate to, I mean, you have to go through here to get up to Badrinath, which is the famous place of Lord Hari. Some people say that Haridwar means Hardwar, just like the British made this Haridwar. They anglicized the name. So that Hara means Lord Shiva, so the way to Kedarnath, it could also mean that, although it's generally accepted, not only by Vaishnavas, but by almost all except the most staunch Shaivites, generally scholars accept that this means Haridwar. We find in the Chaitanya Charitamrita also, Lord Chaitanya says, when teaching Sanatana Goswami, that the deity of Lord Hari is situated at Mayapur. This doesn't mean Mayapur in Bengal, this means Haridwar, which was known as Mayapuri. And still an area of the town is called Mayapuri. Now it seems there was a very ancient temple, important temple here of Lord Vishnu, which was desecrated by the Muslims. On that point of the name being Haridwar or Haridwar, everywhere you see written in Hindi, Haridwar. Just a little bit further up from Haridwar is the place of the Saptarishis, seven sages. Now the Ganga breaks into seven streams there, and we have three of them coming together at the place we're standing now. Now, just a couple of weeks ago there was heavy flooding, and we're taking a photo of how a footbridge just broke. You see the power of the water. This whole area we're looking at must have been underwater. Yes, it's a quiet day in Haridwar. It's really not the main season. We see different mutts from around India have their representative branches here, so that pilgrims who are affiliated to those mutts, householders mainly, as well as sannyasis, they can stay. When they come, here's the Sringeri Mutt with writing in Hindi and Tamil.
Hello.
Yeah, sleepy day at Haridwar. People coming out to us, different kinds of beggars. Snake charmer beggar. One-armed sadhu in black beggar. Asking for 20 rupees. Then just a few pilgrims moseying around, people sleeping on the sidewalk. Pilgrims asking where we're from, usual thing. Sadhu with a weighing scale, making a living. Got to make ends meet somehow or other. We're at Brahma Kund at midday. It's quite a good crowd here compared to whatever else is going on. Pilgrims here, obviously from different parts of India, by the women's dress, you can tell more. This is an inlet of water from the Ganga. It just goes in and out again. It just separated from the Ganga by a concrete divider. Midday Aarti, the bells are ringing, but no one's taking too much attention of the Aarti. That's in the little temple at the side there. There is a Brahma temple. Even though we were supposed to believe that the only Brahma temple was at Pushkar. Mostly North India Gaonwalas, village people here, the pilgrims. Some well-to-do, respectable people also. The Gaonwalas mostly come in. Gaonwalas means village people, mostly in groups, whereas the more sophisticated people, they're just in small family groups. They come up in their cars mostly. Yeah, here at Brahma Kund, you can just swim out into the Ganga, and as you swim across, you get carried away by the strong force of the Ganga. You have to swim across so you can get on the other side. Otherwise, if you get carried out into the Ganga, you're in trouble, unless you're a very strong swimmer. Yeah, like all these holy places, there's always something going on in Haridwar, but at times it really comes to life. So this is one of the times where it's not really full of life, but the regular pilgrim activities are ticking on, ticking over. Have a good collection of beggar sadhus with 1.5 legs or 1 leg or no arms or something like that. Ramanuja says he drove their car through the center of the town. I mean, it's not such a big town. The population, the fixed population, of course there's always a floating population, the fixed population's only about 100,000. Maybe it's more than that. This book says 100,000, but I think since that was published, it's probably increased maybe 125,000, something like that. But he said it took him 2 hours to go through the central marketplace, which is only about 300 meters long. That was in June, holiday season. Because especially from Delhi, there's so many rich people in Delhi, they all have cars and they all come up to the Himalayas to get away from the heat. They pass through here. That's a nice thing about India, that for even the materialistic people, their holidays, they mostly go to... Now they're starting to go to America and all this, but mostly they go to the holy places. In the description of Badrinath, we see that Lord Vishnu makes one of the conditions that he will stay in Badrinath only on the condition. There are three conditions. One of them is that it always remains a place of tapasya. So, of course, all these modern people going up in their Maruti cars, it's beginning to shake that condition of tapasya a little bit. Although the very nature of the place is that it's not really meant for enjoyment, and you can't really get into the mood of enjoyment even if you try. The vibrations are different. Just like you find some places like West Coast America or Thailand where the vibrations for enjoyment are very strong. So in the Himalayas, the vibrations for tapasya and spiritual life, they are very strong. Particularly the Himalayas, they're meant for tapasya and maybe not so much for our Gaurya Vaishnav, that too much tapasya is not wanted by our Gaurya Vaishnavas. So it's good for maybe the old school of Vaishnavs that in previous ages, just like Madhvacharya was here, Ramanuja. And for Mayavadis, of course, in the Bhagavatam, Prabhupada says that the Brahmavadis, they prefer the Himalayas. They prefer the Himalayas, whereas the devotees, they prefer Vrindavan Mathura. Just before coming up here, I saw Jayadvaita Maharaj's editorial in the BTG talking about the difference between Krishna consciousness and computer consciousness. So inspired by that, I made the major step of leaving my computer behind. Thank you, Jayadvaita Maharaj. This Maya Kipuri, the people say that is the name of Maya, or Maya Devi, Durga, one form of Durga, is established there. And from that the name comes. Actually, there are many, many demigod temples here. One thing which impresses people a lot, those who come from caste families, when they come here to Haridwar, then they go to certain priests who they've been tending their family's religious needs in Haridwar for generations. So what happens is they go to them and they say, they'll tell their name, their father's name, the village they're from. Of course, now in India what's happened, people are much more mobile than they used to be. But previously, then they have to say the village they're originally from. And then they'll find out, they have some system of finding out their father, he visited here such and such a date. His father's father visited here such and such a date. And they can go back generations and generations because the priests have been keeping the records generation after generation. so they can find out their whole family tree by visiting Haridwar. Then the priests, they do their, they say they perform their religious rites with them. They help them to do puja, and they tell them the glories of the place, show them which places to visit, to set the Brahmin's duties there. Yajan, yajan, patan, patan. So these things are done, and of course, they also receive some charity for these activities. Officially, this area, Haridwar, Haridwar, that is a place of no meat and no alcohol. But as I suspected and was confirmed by Badri Vishal Prabhu, that those who want to take it, they're taking it anyway. Meat and wine and everything. One way or another, there's a way to do everything. I was saying that different religious institutions have their ashrams here, so that visiting pilgrims can take advantage of their facilities, so they can serve the visiting pilgrims who are connected with their mat. Well, our ISKCON ashram here is like that too. They have their local preaching activities, but they also welcome and look after ISKCON devotees who visit Haridwar and give them guidance on how to proceed up towards Badrinath. Haridwar has a lot of important history. Ajamil came here to attain his final liberation of going back to Godhead. Narad heard the message of Bhagavatam here from the four Kumaras, that you'll read in the prayers of the personified Vedas, how Narad heard from the four Kumaras. But the importance of Haridwar as a Vaishnav Tirtha has been obscured, because about 700 years ago, the Mayavadis, they drove out the Ramanandis, who are also, Ramanandis are not what we would consider to be properly situated in a Vaishnava Sampradaya. But anyway, they were worshipping Lord Ram and doing puja and so many things. But even that Vaishnava influence was destroyed about 700 years ago. So the main thing to see here is Ganga. And the main thing in most of the Himalayas, most of the places, is the Ganga. Just down the road from here was the capital of Daksha, Kankal. We hope to visit that on the way back. But
Daksha doesn't want it to.
The Sati's Kund is there. Where she performed Atmahatya, suicide. We hope to visit that on the way back. Just to 10 kilometers from Haridwar. Bhima Goda. Goda means knee. So we saw the kund which was made there from Ganga water. We took photos of that. So the idea is that Bhima was very proud of his strength and his ability. But while here at Haridwar, his ego was a little bit dented. I don't know if we should say that. But anyway, he slipped, which he wasn't expected to do. But even in his slipping, when his knee came in contact with the ground, it made a big indentation, which is now Bhim Goda. Revised information after speaking with Badri Vishal Prabhu, who's the temple president here. We only have a small ashram here, but he has big plans for the future, for making a nice hostel so that life members and students can come here. So anyway, revised information, he says that the book in which it says it's the population of Haridwar is 1 lakh, that's well out of date. It's much more like 5 lakhs, because surrounding villages that become absorbed, just like in all over India, the process of urbanization is going on. It means that the towns grow out, just like it happened all over the world. The towns grow out and neighboring villages just get absorbed, and this way towns become very big. So it's about 500,000 now. And during the summer, during the holiday season, there's an average of about 300,000, 3 lakhs floating population, pilgrims coming and going all the time. Now, another thing I was saying, the Brahmakund, three branches of the river join together. Actually, they don't. Rather, this artificial islands have been made to split and rejoin the river together. Now, we were driving out to Saptarshi Kund, not the one way up by the Yamunotri. This is another one, just out where the place of the Saptarishis, where they were meditating, just outside Haridwar. And so on the road, it's about 2-3 kilometers out there, so many big ashrams and new ones going up, being built. There's one tower, you can climb up and you can see at that point where the Ganga splits into seven, and then again she comes back to join into one stream. The story here is that the seven rishis, they were meditating here. When Maharaj Bhagirath came, they all wanted that the Ganga will come just past their ashram. So to fulfill everyone's desire, the Ganga split herself into seven, so as not to disappoint or upset any of the rishis. So this platform, this artificial platform, you can see in the photos, it's concreted over with small buildings just at the Brahmakund. That really comes to life at night. This is the off-season, so it's hardly imaginable what it's like. It must be completely packed out during the tourist season, during the main season. There's the Ganga Puja, and there's all kinds of things going on under the light of the street lamps. There are all kinds of things. There's people selling all kinds of ridiculous little whistles. There's a guy playing a harpsichord. No one taking much interest in him. There's someone giving massage right out, lying out in the sidewalk. Usual chaotic madness of Indian life. We're just right down by the Ganga here at Brahmakund, flying so fast, very, very fast. Yeah, there's people selling flowers, people with weighing scales, you pay 50 paisa and you get yourself weighed, all kinds of things going on. A lot of South Indians here and Bengalis also, as well as North Indian people. South Indians, especially Tamils. Guys strolling around selling pan with their little shop strung over their shoulder, selling chocolates. So Haridwar is a very famous name. People come from all over the world here. I was just trying to understand what is so special, because like I was saying, there's no particular temple. The Ganga is the main attraction, but then Ganga is there in so many places. This is, of course, the place where the Ganga comes for the first time out of the hills onto the flat land. It is the gateway to the Himalayas, where Badri Vishal Prabhu was telling me that 80% of the pilgrims, they don't actually go up to the Himalayas. Only about 20% go up. Of course, it's one of these special places where the Kumbh Mela takes place, but it doesn't have any particular temple. Like in Varanasi, there's this Vishwanath temple.
Dutch temple.
We were just talking about the Himalayas. They have their own special attraction. There are so many holy places in India, but the Himalayas are special. Most of the holy places, or not most, many of them, they're fairly easily accessible now by road or train, or they've even developed into big towns like Varanasi, Prayag, Mathura. They've developed into big commercial towns, a lot of hustle and bustle. But the Himalayas, they retain much of their pristine character just by their very nature. You can't develop big cities on the side of mountains.
they can't get too much polluted either, because the wind is also always blowing. And even though people can go now up by bus to Badrinath, but still it's a very difficult journey, as Prabhupada says in the Bhagavatam, taking much. He says Badrinath is a very important place of pilgrimage for the Hindus. We'll find that in the third canto, I think. He says people can go there after taking much trouble. So previously people used to go by walking. Still people do, just like our Padyatra went there. That's the proper way to go. You can stop at so many different holy places on the way up. But even going by bus, it's a lot of difficulty to go there. It's somewhat dangerous also. It's cold, there's no nice food, there's no very comfortable arrangements for living. So a great sense of achievement in reaching there also. Great sense of achievement means any holy place, if you go by walking, just like people, they go even now, it's quite common to go from Maharashtra to Dwarka. Not quite common, but some people do it. They go by walking, but to walk up the Himalayas is another whole dimension. And like I was saying, even though the towns, they may be polluted, like Varanasi, very polluted and noisy and dirty, but the Himalayas, they'll always remain clean and nice.
At night, we came to Rishikesh. The idea being that we can get an early start here. Now, often devotees, they mispronounce this as Rishikesh. And some people say that the name has derived from the name of the Supreme Lord, Hrishikesh, beginning with an H. Actually, the name is Rishikesh. Rishi meaning a great sage, and Kesh meaning hair. That story you can get from the book, how one Rishi's hair became the trees and vegetation around this area, therefore the name became Rishikesh. We parked near to the Ganga, but when I woke in the morning, the current was so fast and it was dark, so I thought it was dangerous to take bath in the Ganga. And we took bath at a nearby tap instead. In Rishikesh, we met the doctor who had attended Prabhupada's lectures here in 1977. And he noted how extremely strongly Prabhupada was speaking and dealing with people. He said even his own disciples, he was very, very strong with them. Any slight mistake they made, he would chastise them very strongly. He remembered that there was one hippie boy who had asked some question. Prabhupada didn't even entertain his question. He just said, "You're not fit to ask any question. Don't ask any question. You just chant Hare Krishna, that's all." Here we are at the bus stand at Rishikesh early in the morning. Just after 5 o'clock, a whole busload of American Sikhs. By American, I mean American, white-skinned Sikhs, men and women, emerge from somewhere, I presume from their hotel, to get into their nice air-conditioned bus which arrives for them. So that was a bit of a surprise for me to see them. I never saw American Sikhs before. I've seen plenty of Indian sadhus who look quite unusual, but now I guess I'm a bit like an Indian who finds Western sadhus unusual. Then around 5:30, here at the bus stand, as you can probably hear in the background, all kinds of activity starts with three-wheeler tempos arriving at the bank of the Ganga full of people. Must be coming from their hotels or another part of town. I can't understand it exactly. Anyway, life starts early, before dawn. It gets quite busy. Now we want to drive on. The devotees who have been here before tell that there's not really that much to see or do here. There's a bunch of Mayavadi ashrams.
And of course there's the Ganga. I was always wondering when we saw pictures of Rishikesh, they showed the picture of this bridge, which is a fairly modern construction, Lakshman Jula suspension bridge. So the reason is that there isn't much to see here, so they always show the pictures of the bridge. Recently the Shivananda Ashram made Shivananda Jula, another bridge, but everyone calls it Ram Jula apparently. So anyway, this is an important place. The name Lakshman Jula comes because of the connection with Lakshman, the brother of Lord Ramachandra, who performed austerities here. But we can't see much of, there isn't much to see visually. So we want to drive up. It's a long drive. We think it may, with stops, we think it's going to take us 2 days. It's about 300 kilometers up to Badrinath, but it's not like driving on an ordinary freeway. It's steep, winding climb and dangerous because there's sheer drops. In fact, every few days you can read in the newspaper how a bus goes off the edge here and people die. So it's quite dangerous. Also, the neither there's anything to stop you falling off the edge, nor can you be sure at the edge of the road. It's probably quite soft and brittle, so you have to be very, very careful. We're waiting till dawn to drive because outside each settlement on the way up, starting from Rishikesh, all the way up to Badrinath and all along the other roads up to Yamunotri, Gangotri, there are police barriers outside each settlement to stop people driving at night, because obviously it's a suicidal thing to do, to drive in the dark on the mountain roads. But Lakshman Jula and Ram Jula, they're footbridges. Jula means bridge. They're footbridges to ashrams on the other side of the Ganga. And the road up the Himalayas follows the Ganga, doesn't cross over it here at Rishikesh. And the road goes along the Shivalik hills. So we're going through those hills now. The direction is up, up, up. Up and winding and snaking and occasionally down before going up, up, up again. The view is, from the very beginning of the journey, quite spectacular. You'll be getting lots of slides of that. The road is also quite good for the first 150 kilometers. It's about, as I say that, we come across a minor landslide. There's a lot of rain yesterday with hail. The mongoose just ran across our path as we're starting the journey, so that's auspicious. ...290 kilometers to Badrinath. The sign says, start early, drive slowly, reach safely. Driving in the daytime only. We come across our first waterfall. Water violently gushing out from the hill. As Ramanuja tells me, there'll be hundreds of them up ahead. Life in India is always an adventure, but I've got the feeling this is going to be a real special adventure with the darshan of Lord Badrinath, the greatest adventure at the end of our journey. Quite low clouds this morning. I was saying last night there was wind and rain and hail. So we're driving through the clouds in some places. Below the clouds and others, and most of the clouds will be going up and up and up. We hit them soon. Just going above Rishikesh, there are small settlements of individual farmers here and there. Grazing is, I expect, all they can do. Much further than this. Grazing, maybe sheep, goats, because the land is about one thing. It's highly coated. Nothing is a bit too rough for
regular farming, agriculture. One tiny village we just passed, perched on the edge of the hill, about 10 houses, innumerable streams and waterfalls, tiny little bridges to cross over them. The water in these streams is clear and pure and fresh, better than any bottled water. We see children in uniform walking to school, walking from one of these villages to who knows where they're going. There's tiny little villages. I guess in one of them there's a school. There's a footbridge over to a village on the other side. We can stand up, see the land is terraced in small plots, probably for rice growing. Just there's a little bit of land which is a little bit more flat. It's not all stones and they terrace it. This morning it's cloudy, like I was saying, there was a big storm yesterday when we were in Haridwar. But in the hills, you never know what the weather's going to be. It's highly changeable. It can be sunny one minute, cold with rain and hail the next minute. One thing Ramanuja was telling me, that as you go up the hills, they're quite nice big hills covered with trees. They gradually get steeper and steeper, but it's quite some distance in before you see the real mountains. Then maybe you're driving around a corner and all of a sudden between the hills you see in the distance some huge, massive, jagged, snow-peaked mountain. And then gradually as you get up, then that's all that there is. We just stopped at Biasi, 30 kilometers up from Rishikesh, which is a place where you can get food, a place to stay. You can also watch Dish TV, it seems. There's a dish antenna, satellite TV. Ramanuja was telling me when he was here in the summer, the road is full of sadhus. It's like there's an orange army going around. There's so many sadhus. They come up mostly from the North Indian plains. They come up and they wander around all different places in the hills, as Prabhupada talks about. There are so many, if you read the Bhagavatam, there are so many sadhus wandering in the hills. So they picked up one. He said he'd just been wandering. It took him 3.5 months to go all around. He was just coming back. And he said, it's no problem, he has no money, but he doesn't need any. Wherever he goes, people give him a little food, a little chai, tea, and this way he goes on. Of course, even for the sadhus who walk, it's much easier now with the roads. The road up to Badrinath is particularly good. This was built by the army who maintain it also, because they have a big base just behind Vyasa Guha, just beyond Badrik Ashram, is the Chinese border. It's just right on the Chinese border. If you throw a stone from that military camp, it'll land in the Chinese military camp, a huge military camp which they have on the other side. So the military built this road after the 1964 invasion of India by China, which Prabhupada refers to in the first canto of Bhagavatam. Yes, just drinking the Himalayan water, so nice and sweet. No need of any chemicals to put in it. Now you see land, it's just terraced every meter. The land is so steep, but any usable land, they use it. You see sometimes houses way up on the hill side. You understand that people here, they live, must be living a very simple life. Similar to Nepal, I saw in the Himalayas in Nepal. They just their own, just the necessities of life. They have the basic necessities. They don't have a shop-based civilization where they're always going to the shops for things. Just they produce mostly whatever they need and live very simply, and they hardly come out of the hills at all. Driving along the alongside, but several hundred feet up above, Yalakananda Ganga here. Very, very beautiful scene. From time to time you see a footbridge over the Ganga just to connect the residents with the road. The residents on the other side, there may be only 3-4 houses, but they need a bridge to connect them. Otherwise, to cross over the Ganga, very powerful, very difficult to cross by any other means. The telegraph lines run all alongside the road. There's STD, the telephone connection with the rest of India and the rest of the world, even from Badrinath. Just see how progress has come to India. We're taking a photo of a terraced area near the beginning of the climb up. A village, if you could call it that, scattered houses here and there. Quite idyllic to look at, but can you imagine they must have to carry water? I don't see any streams there. Must be quite a task going up and down. But of course they're used to it. They're born in this situation. They don't know anything else. See, there are a few banana trees here and there. Some wafts of smoke going up. That must be them burning to cook their breakfast. Must be very cold here in the winter with the winds blowing. Pretty rough life. Prabhupada mentions that flat, fertile land, that is the most pious kind of place to be born in, just like you see Bengal is very flat and fertile. Difficult place to live here. Nice to visit, nice to look at. But for tapasya, this is the right kind of place. Not for easy living. Occasionally we see electric pylons also. They don't follow the road. They go a more direct route up to Badrinath. So there's electricity all over the Himalayas, at least in the tourist areas where we are visiting. We come across regular traffic, mostly of trucks, and just now beginning, 20 to 8 in the morning, first bus we passed. There's regular traffic up and down, trucks bringing things in and out. The only other vehicle we saw coming the same way that we're going was one Jeep. That's because we started early. We're ahead of the day's traffic. Quite a few monkeys too here, jumping in and out of the trees. The hills and jungles no doubt have all kinds of wildlife. The local language spoken here is Garhwali, a dialect of Hindi, it could be considered. Although most people everyone knows Hindi also. Maybe those who live in those remote houses who don't come out much, they don't know much Hindi. Of course, the education is Hindi. And Garhwali, this kind of, there's so many languages like this in India, regional dialects, which there's no written language on. It's quite common to see, quite common means every 100 meters or so, some mini landslide of rocks, gravel, and mud that have come down on the road. Not enough to block it. Sometimes it's enough to block it. And in 1 or 2 days, you have to wait for it to get cleared. This kind of road all the time needs maintenance. Trucks go up and down, remove the stones of the boulders of the road. It's quite a big job. It's as soon as you take out the stuff which is on the road, this stuff behind it falls down onto it. So it may take several hours just to clear a small landslide. And a big one may take 1 or 2 days. Now we stopped at a place where we're photoing these terraces again. We're just thinking probably this terraced land, you know what it's like in India. People do the same thing generation after generation, so probably maybe for hundreds or even some thousands of years, these terraces have been maintained. Few tourists go up and down on motorbikes also. They must stay in hotels. They must stay in hotels and just go on motorbikes for fun. A couple of Sikhs just came past us as we stopped to take photos, calling out merrily, Hare Krishna. A couple of Sikhs on a motorbike. The crop we see most on the terraces, the main crop is rice. Seems that hill people, as in Nepal, they mostly eat rice more than wheat. Wheat won't grow so much. We're stopping on our way up to take photos, time to time. So gradually the buses are coming up behind us. So we're overtaking them again as we start, and then again we stop. They pass us, and like this we're going on. And we pass them again. We see the buses going up. Everyone, the tourists are all looking around, very eager to see everything. And the buses coming down, the tourists look exhausted. It's quite a strenuous journey. A few army vehicles going up and down also. Sound travels a long way here. You can, standing on the hill, you hear from way down in the valley, maybe a kilometer away, the sound of children hooting and playing. And of course the sound of vehicles. That also is carried. You see the monkeys bounding quite happily up the rocks. They're quite used to going up almost sheer climbs. Of course there's always something to hold on to. The people who live in this area, they must be like goats also in the way that they move. They must be quite used to going up very steep inclines, especially because the whole land, it's very fragile. It's mostly made up of stones. If you tread on it, it gives way. Taking Badri Vishal Prabhu's suggestion, I think we're probably not going to do the Char Dham Yatra this time, because as he says, there's enough to do just going up to Badrinath. So we're thinking just to go to Badrinath this time. That time we can take more time. We can make a selection of pictures. We can take pictures going up and coming down so that we can get the sun at different positions. Sometimes, depending on which way you're facing, the sun is not shining so favorably. Anyway, we're taking photos wherever we can because we don't know exactly what time of day we'll be coming down or what the weather's going to be like. But anyway, we're thinking just to do a one dham yatra. And anyway, if we did 4 dhams, we'd be in such a rush is one thing. We wouldn't get so many pictures. And it would be too much probably for one Bhaktivinoda article anyway. We could do. So what we're thinking is maybe after a couple of years, we'll come back and do the other 3 dhams. Something like that. This way we're able to go a little more relaxed and a little more relaxed manner, that we don't have to charge all over the Himalayas for 2 weeks. Like the military on some exercise or something like that. Actually, the real way to go is by walking slowly and peacefully. So if we go a little more slowly, we can be a little bit more in that mood, not so much in the tourist mood, which so many people are coming with, but more in the meditative, reflective mood. The mountains are actually, if we think of in the philosophical way, which we're supposed to, the mountains are actually supposed to give some idea of the majesty of God. Sthavaranam Himalaya, one of
Krishna's opulence is the among immovable objects, he is the Himalayas, so the mountains. We are awed at seeing the majesty of the mountains, but then just imagine how great is he who is the maker of millions of universes, and on each planet there are millions of mountains. Also, of course, the mountains are the stacks of the bones of the universal form of the Lord. Sanctified also by great personalities like, of course, Lord Shiva, who meditates here, and whose wife is from here, the daughter of the king of the mountains, and so many other great demigods. And by so many rishis who have meditated here, and even now there are many saintly people living here. So the presence of these great personalities also, or to speak, mention Vyasadeva, also makes it a very purified place. It's not really meant so much just for coming and gawking at, but a place for prayer, meditation, reflection. It's quite a feat of Ugra karmic progress to build this road, telegraph lines, which straddle valleys. See the telegraph lines that go way across the valley, and the pylons. It's quite convenient for us, even though we criticize it for being Ugra karmic. It's man's endeavor to conquer nature. Of course, they're not conquering. We see telegraph poles that have succumbed to landslides and to less careful drivers. It's a constant endeavor to keep the road open with the landslides. And of course, 6 months a year, they have to succumb to nature by closing the access to Badrinath Dam due to the severe weather. Big stacks of kadu at the side of the road. Kadu, what's that called? Pumpkin. It's a crop that can, it grows as a creeper type. So they have big stacks at the side of the road people can purchase. This scenery, this creation of God is better than anything any artist can do. Better than visiting any art gallery or looking through any art book. It's with a philosophical mind, one is not only a tourist, but he appreciates God in everything. So we're seeing here God as the best artist. There are many signs here exhorting people to drive carefully, mostly that blow your horn, be nice to people. We just passed one who said, remember God. I don't know if that's supposed to be another warning about the dangers of driving like the other, whether it's from some broader motive, but anyway, it's nice to see it, even if you don't particularly know who God is. You see a team of men at work, they've just been clearing the landslide, and now they're just clearing the small pieces of gravel off the road with a local broom. That means taking the branch of some shrub, the branch with the leaves, and using it to crush the road. Yeah, just before Prayag, you still see cows, I don't know how far, up you can see them. Very small cows. There are also plenty of mules, which are the workhorse of the Himalayas. Goats and so on. Buffaloes and so on. The local people are Pahari type, hill type people. They have those little bit Chinese looking features and kind of rough features, a little bit means rough their hands and their fingers and toes are a little blunt, and they're very tough people. So here we are, Dev Prayag. It's the first of the Prayags we're seeing on the way up. There are seven Prayags. Prayag means place where two rivers join together. So this town, Dev Prayag, is situated just where the two Prayags meet together. This is considered very auspicious when two rivers meet. As Bhagirathi and Alakananda are meeting here, you can see there's a temple here. Oh, here at Dev Prayag is what the people at Dev Prayag say is the actual beginning of the Ganga. Where Alakananda and Bhagirathi meet, after that it's called Ganga. There are different opinions because there are so many branches which join together to make the Ganga. So like, just like there's Alakananda Gomukh, Bhagirathi Gomukh, different people say that the beginning of the Ganga is different places according to where they themselves are situated, although it's generally accepted that the Gomukh, where the Alakananda comes from, that is the actual original source of the Ganga. Some people say that Yamunotri is the source of the Ganga because the Yamuna also flows into the Ganga much later on at Prayag, where Allahabad's city is today. Many Sikhs go along this route also because Guru Gobind Singh also came up here because the original Sikh gurus there. If you see their writings, they're all actually devotees of Krishna. You see the Guru Granth Sahib. So there's the place of Guru Gobind Singh is up much closer to Badrinath, and then there's the Hemkund Sahib, which is one lake which is very sacred to the Sikhs, way up in the Himalayas. That I was saying about God's creation being more beautiful than any work of art. The artist, he makes a painting with much endeavor, but God simply by his wish makes that which is much more beautiful. And the job of the artist is simply to copy what God has made onto canvas, although his effort must be insufficient and incomplete. It cannot match the original. Of course, modern art means whatever insane thing comes in your head, you put it on the canvas. Like traditional architecture all over the world, the buildings in the Himalayas blend with and complement the scenery rather than sticking out like a sore thumb, to use a overused analogy, cliche. It's quite traditional architecture is quite aesthetic. So here we are at Dev Prayag. Here to park the bus and walk into the town. There's no road into the town. It's only by footpaths. You have to cross over a bridge. We're just having a look at a huge lizard on the rock the other side, about a meter long. We're just walking towards the footbridge into the town. The sound of the Bhagirathi roaring as she comes down. Very loud. You have to, if you're conversing with someone, I'm speaking right into the mic, but if you're conversing, you have to speak loudly to be heard. This is the auspicious sound which is heard 24 hours a day, day after day, year after year, for thousands and thousands of years at this place. People are living here, hearing the auspicious sound of the Ganga. Just walking over the bridge. It's not an American bridge. It shakes as you walk across it. This town of Deo Prayag, Deo or Dev, it's Deo is a local Hindi upper branch. What's that? It means the word is changed from the original.
So Deo means Dev, and this is Dev Prayag. This was made well known in the ISKCON world by Vasudev from France, who made a little movie about that. In one conversation, Prabhupada was saying that UP, Uttar Pradesh, that is the best state in India. And one reason he gave, there's so many holy places here. Of course, one thing we saw in Haridwar was the Uttarakhand movement. They're making agitation to make this whole mountain area from Haridwar up into a separate state, which you can understand from a geographic point of view. The capital of UP is such a long distance away in Lucknow. That agitation has been going on for a few years now. Of course, we have nothing to do with that. So here we are at Dev Prayag, and just up from the Prayag, there are little shelters. The pandas, they told, I asked what it was, the little shelters, which are for people, they can take darshan during the tremendous heat, because we're not that far up. Even now, it's a little hot here. It's 10 o'clock in the morning, and it's quite warm. Not as hot as it would be down on the plains, but still in June, we can imagine it's beginning of June, it's quite hot. So these are all full of sand, and I was wondering how and why, what is this all about? Panda explained that 15 days ago, the Ganga flooded. There was so much flood that it went right up into the marketplace above here. And the sand was carried down by the Ganga. They're also exhorting us to do Ganga Puja, which pandas do for the benefit of our departed ancestors. So, of course, we explain that Devarshi Bhutapta Nunang Pitrinam, etc. Anyway, they're quite friendly fellows. Okay, the pandas, pretty good talker. We're going to do our Ganga Puja here. Just on the other side of the Prayag, there's a body being burned. Someone whose body has been brought up from Tehri Garhwal district, that means down on the plain, down a little bit, and their body is brought here for burning. So our friend the Panda from Madras, who speaks very good Hindi, which is unusual for Madrasi people, is telling that we just did the ceremony of offering flowers to the Ganga for me to help all the forefathers whose names I had to struggle to remember, grandmother, grandfather, to get them delivered and to deliver them to Vishnu Loka. So he says, in the course of his prayers, he was saying that Bhagirathi, Alakananda are coming here. And also, in hidden form, the Saraswati is also here. So this is also a Triveni. And he also explained that at all these places, at all the places where the Ganga meets with another river, at all these prayags, also the Saraswati is also present in hidden or subtle form. So that was very interesting. So the panda, as pandas are expected to be, is a mine of information. I asked him about the broken bridge. He said it was under construction when 10 years ago it was blown away by a storm, by very strong winds. So next year they're supposed to start building it again. That's a road, so there'll be a road connection directly between Rishikesh and Tehri, which is the name of the district, Tehri Garhwal, so presumably that's the district town. Yeah, it's not surprising he speaks very good Hindi, because his forefathers first came here 150 years ago to cater for the pilgrims from the south. So he knows, in his home he speaks Garhwari, which is the local language, but as the pandas do, he knows enough to invite people for his services and tell them all the mantras and what to do. He knows, can speak a little bit of all the main languages of India. Just like you see businessmen in Dubai, they can speak all kinds of different languages a little bit, just to do their business. Just like I saw now, there's so much business, with so many Russian people come to Dubai. So they've all learned a little Russian now, enough to do their business. So the same way the pandas, they know enough of each language to perform their services. He also offered me his blessings for a long life, which I hope may come true. He said, long life and preach Krishna consciousness. Yeah, so it's a good thing we came at this season because everything's green. Otherwise in the summer it looks like Rajasthan. Even Rajasthan must be green right now. Yeah, the small town of Dev Prayag is built on a hill, most of it facing the Alakananda, just as it goes, just as she joins with the Bhagirathi. The town's facing east, which is very nice, because in the winter you get the sun to heat up your home in the morning, and in the summer the hottest sun is already on the other side, so both ways it's good, both in the summer and the winter. Walking up the quiet, narrow streets of Dev Prayag towards the temple, smell of freshly ground spices, names on the doors like Dhyani, typical Himalayan name, rice cooking smells, typical Indian village smells, spices being cooked. As we're here at the top of the town, we're coming to the temple. Oh, one thing that Panda told me is that he has people from America and Europe occasionally come here also to perform the rites for their departed ancestors. It means they're tourists, they come here and he engages them in such a way, but he's surprised how they follow it with such faith, that they agree to his proposal to perform a ceremony for the people's departed ancestors. Here at the temple of Lord Sri Ram is written, this holy spot where Lord Sri Ram performed a yajna after his victorious return from Sri Lanka was sanctified by installation of Murti of Sri Raghunath Ji, that is Ramchandra, by Adi Shankar in the 1st century AD. It is one of the 108 Divya Kshetras of our Punya Bhumi, that means the Sri Sampradaya Divya Kshetras, and has been visited from time immemorial by most of the pilgrims from all over India. An inscription behind the temple mentions the visit of one such pilgrim in the 1st century AD. The renovation of this holy temple was undertaken by devotees of Lord Ram at the behest of His Holiness Sri Shankaracharya of Kanchi, Kamakoti Pitam, in the year 1986 to 1987. No photography inside. Inside the temple, the deity of Lord Sri Ram is standing, appears to be standing at a slightly off from perpendicular angle, with very large conch type eyes and large mouth which seems to be painted silver, and typical Ramanuja Sampradaya tilak with yellow chandan on both sides of the tilak covering his forehead. Inside the temple the crickets are constantly chirping. And there is a sign, Ramo Vigraha Van Dharmaha. The very form of Lord Ramachandra is he is the personification of religion. Many, many banyan and peepal trees here. One thing we see all over this area is signs in Hindi exhorting people not to drink liquor. The hill people generally everywhere in India and other places in Asia too, Nepal, Thailand, all these places, they're notorious for their drinking habit. So obviously the problem is quite widespread here also. Although the hills are thinly populated compared to the plains,
there's surprising number of people do live up here. You'll see throughout our journey up to Badrinath, you see along the hills scattered here and there, houses, villages here and there. After driving interspersed with stopping to photo and report on holy places on the way up, we stopped for the night at Nandaprayag. Get something to eat, which we didn't do all day, and park the bus on a piece of flat land on the side of the road, looking down into the Ganga Valley, seeing our Gayatris just as the sun sets. We expect to reach Badrinath tomorrow. We have just under 120 kilometers to go. If the roads were built according to the system that we get in Switzerland or Italy, then it would be a much shorter journey. The roads there, they just go straight through the mountain, onto a bridge, right into the next mountain. They just make the road straight. They don't care too much about the mountains in the way. But here the roads go all around, up, down, following the path of the mountain. So to go a short distance as the crow flies, you may have to go long, long distance. Many times we go right down into a valley and come back up the other side. So after going maybe 2 or 3 kilometers, the actual distance covered is only maybe 0.5 kilometer. We're just stopping here at about 6 o'clock because you can't drive on at night unless you're totally insane, because it's too dangerous. You just might drive off the edge. So practically all the traffic stops after dark here. Here's a correction. Nandaprayag, according to the sign just in front of us, is only 100 kilometers from Badrinath. So I woke up early the next morning, sleeping in our bus, to the sound of the Ganga roaring several hundred feet below, and constant chirping of crickets. It's a very dark night, but still the silhouette of the hills in the background can just be made out, and as it gradually became light, you could see the thin clouds hanging around the hills. Looks very nice. The moon is just a sliver. Taking bath, quite cold, fresh mountain stream. It is made into a pipe, comes out through a pipe, constantly flowing. But I'm sure it's going to be plenty colder up at Badrinath, which is 100 kilometers up away, and quite a few more meters up in altitude. A few buses moving, coming through Nandaprayag even at 4 o'clock in the morning. And there was some traffic moving even till about 2 hours after sunset last night. So presumably they know the roads very well, these drivers. They're confident enough to drive in the dark. We weren't. After Nandaprayag, the land inclined steeply upwards. So far we've been going up fairly steeply, but going up towards Joshi Mutt, it becomes much steeper. We start to see real mountains, not just big hills, but real big mountains, snow-capped mountains in the distance between the hills. We also see some village settlements on the side of hills so high. I wonder how the people can get up there. Maybe they're just born up there and they stay there all their lives. And it's so steep. It must be like, it must have the senses of goats to be able to live there. Shortly after leaving Nanprayag, we see a sign that says, "You are 3,000 meters above sea level." And it just seems a few minutes later, one says, "You are 4,000 meters above sea level." The road becomes narrower, the drop down becomes much more, but the drivers, they don't seem to be any more careful. It's definitely the most dangerous road I've ever been on. We're now negotiating a narrow road, if you call it a road, it's a dirt road, with the sheer drop to our left, and the sheer drop to our left, and the sheer height wall to our right. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna. Not only is it a dirt road, but it's all muddy and wet. Just to add to the fun, if we happen to skid, there's nothing which the government has put up to stop us going for a flight. As we go up and up, now we're climbing steeply. It becomes cold quickly. It's not warm like it was down on the plains, or even the hills we were coming up yesterday. But now we're going up fast, so it's becoming cold fast. Have you ever wondered why the sadhus up in the hills